Welcome to the Point Forward podcast with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's J.R. Radcliffe and Jim Ozarski, an over-caffeinated Milwaukee Bucks conversation.
The Point Forward podcast, Milwaukee Bucks chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the podcast, and on the other line is Jim Ozarski. He is Bucks beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. It has been an adventure following the Milwaukee Bucks in recent weeks. They've shown up for some pretty big marquee games. They beat Brooklyn at Brooklyn. They delivered a scintillating performance, especially in the first half against the Golden State Warriors in a win. And they're losing everything else. It's a very strange run. And Jim, we got to talk about it. And obviously, there's the top of mind thing that we will have to touch on is Jrue Holiday being out with this ankle injury, and that seemingly playing a very big role in the Bucks' struggles lately. But I'm just going to go back out on the ledge that I was on last week. I'm starting to wonder, Jim, is this Bucks team even really great or really very good? I'm starting to wonder if they're even very good. Like, I know intellectually they're a playoff team. I know that they don't have Jrue Holiday. I know they're only really even a couple games out of first, and they have a first-place clash coming up against the Chicago Bulls in a few days. But I also, I see them lose big leads, and that's not even as big a deal as it is just struggling against teams that they should handle. And I'm, you know, like, it's middle of January. At some point, they are what they are. What's going on, Jim? Is that they just crushed the Warriors. But is this a great team? Can it be a great basketball team?
I mean, the short answer is yes. And I think it's because we've seen them, you know, handle... I mean, not just handle. I mean, they sent Golden State home. Yes, there's no Draymond Green. You know, they've pounded Brooklyn twice. Yes, no Kyrie Irving. But that's also the state of the NBA. I mean, we're going to get into Jrue Holiday. You know, the Bucks are missing their, at least this last week. Plus, you know, they've missed their point guard. So, yeah, I get what you're saying. You know, that we're over the timeline, so to speak. You know, we're into the second half of the year. And while the players don't want to make excuses of, well, we haven't been healthy all year, it's different, I think, JR, when one of the big three are out. Like, it's, I'm not trying to discount Brooke Lopez's long-term injury and the effect on the defense there. I'm not trying to discount, you know, Grayson Allen even being sick for essentially all of December. To me, that has mattered as well. It's just when those three guys play, they're 16-3. And in one of those games, Chris Middleton didn't finish it with a knee injury. And in the other one, right, January 5th against Toronto, Jrue Holiday sprained his ankle and then tested positive for COVID the next morning. So who even knows how he was feeling? Like, I guess that's where I'm at, JR, is like, all of these ebbs and flows and ups and downs, it's still, when those three are together, they are so good. And really, man, when you're the defending champs, you get this, man. I think you do. You get the benefit of the doubt of, as long as they're healthy come round one of the playoffs, you can't really knock them too. I mean, there's stuff that, right, day to day, there is. And we'll get into some of that. But no, I think until we see the big three together and then this continues to happen, I don't know if it's totally worth, like, you know, going so far over. But I definitely see it, though, because look, the facts are the facts. They've played, what, 44 or 5 games, and only 19 of they've been together. So, you know, that 60% of the season has been without one, two, or three of them.
So let's talk about the injury here too, Jrue. Bucks have lost 6 of 8 with him out, and it seems, and we've touched on this before, that his importance to this team can't be overstated. And you know, Chris Middleton had an awesome night Monday on MLK Day. It's why we're recording here a day later. We had the holiday here, and he was sensational. Atlanta still came back and won the game. You know, Giannis has not been awful. Maybe there are times he's not as MVP caliber self during this run, but he's very good, and they're still not winning on a regular basis. So, you know, the missing ingredient of Jrue Holiday seems to be especially important, especially with the season he's had when he has been healthy. The fact that they keep holding him out, I would say it's getting a little bit alarming that it's been this long. I think that, you know, what you're talking about, when you're the defending champs, you get to play around with things a little bit. You don't have to have your stars, you know, rushing back from an injury. It's more like, let's take our very sweet time because we know you'll be healthy then when it really matters at the end of the year. So I feel like that's baked into this a little bit, but the longer he's out, the more it starts to get unsettling. And I felt that way about injuries at different points during this year, and nothing has really come of it other than the injury to Brooke Lopez. Nothing has really come of it that's in a long-term variety, but still, the caution, is it, do you think, reading between the lines, do you think that caution is purely like, we can afford to be cautious, or is there a deep concern here that he sustained an injury that's going to linger for quite some time?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. Now, as we record this, it's an individual day. As we, you know, the Bucks didn't allow me into practice, so we won't know until tomorrow pregame, you know, how Jrue Holiday fared. We'll see if he's upgraded, you know, for this Memphis game, you know, from out to a doubtful or probable. That would signal some progress. So I think they're being cautious, but I also think the fact that he hurt this ankle already this year, JR, and that first stretch of games he missed at the very beginning of the year were because of this ankle injury. So that means there's two sprains, straight, whatever, right? I mean, they're calling it soreness, but I think when you miss at least a week, you're looking at an ankle sprain or some version of that, right? And so, yeah, I think that's a long-term concern because he's a basketball player, and now he's done this twice. And ankles are kind of one of those things where if that gets a little loose, that could be a problem. You step on a guy, someone steps on you. Yeah, I think so. On one hand, JR, I do think they're being cautious for cautious sake. Like these games, they could lose five in a row, and Jrue Holiday can miss all of these five games, and everyone would freak out. But then he comes back, he's totally healthy, and they rip off 10 of 12. Like, you know what I mean? Which would be feasible. However, if he were to come back, let's say, in this Memphis game, and he's still kind of feeling and then he rolls this ankle again the week before the playoffs, well, now that's what's worse, right? So I think it's a little bit of both. The fact this is the second time means it could be a long-term, quote-unquote, issue, meaning you got to pay attention to it, but also they have room to be cautious because it's January, you know, into February. Maybe, you know, I don't think he's going to be out another week here, JR, but that's what I'm saying. They kind of have that room to let such things heal properly.
You mentioned that Memphis game, that game taking place on Wednesday night, Bucks against the Grizzlies. And then there's the big one Friday against the first place Bulls. Sharing first place are the Chicago Bulls right now with the Miami Heat, believe it or not. So that'll be a big, big game Friday. We talked about that last week a little bit. Not sure if we're going to have a ton of traveling Bulls fans or, you know, Bucks enthusiasm, what that's going to look like. And then the Saturday game also at home. So it's a 3-game homestand at Pfizer Forum. The Sacramento Kings come to town. That game got moved up, which actually Jim just wrote about at jsonline.com, back to 6 o'clock from 7 o'clock because the Green Bay Packers will be kicking off at 7:15 in their playoff game against the San Francisco 49ers elsewhere in the state of Wisconsin. So the Bucks Packers synergy coming to fruition a little bit. There'll be plenty of overlap, but the Bucks will be coming on a back to back, finding an earlier start in the second game. So I thought that was interesting. These standings, Jim, I know we talk about them, but we get later into January here and there's still just nothing like I would have anticipated. Some of that is the COVID madness. Some of that is just unexpectedly great performances from teams like the Cavaliers and the Bulls. Chicago is tied for first, as I mentioned, with the Miami Heat. Brooklyn a half game back. Brooklyn, of course, the team with the Bucks that everyone saw as the contender for the East Championship. And then the Cleveland Cavaliers have moved ahead of Milwaukee in the standings. Right now, that would be your first round matchup. It would be Bucks Cavaliers at Cleveland. It would be Cleveland hosting a 7-game series. There's no way anyone saw that possibility coming. Obviously, a long way to go, and things are really, really bundled up there, jumbled up. 76ers, Hornets, Wizards after that. And then maybe this Raptors team gets involved too. They could be in the play-in game. They could move up as well. They're 3.5 games behind the Bucks right now. And this Raptors team, they've got something on Milwaukee. They've now won all three games this year between the two teams. They won two games stretching into last year, two of the three. So it's a five-game Raptors winning streak over the Bucks. I think Pedro Martinez back in the late 90s had that comment about the Yankees. He just has to call the Yankees his daddy. That is how I feel about the Toronto Raptors. Doesn't matter how good or how bad. You can go back to, obviously, you can go back to the Kawhi Leonard Eastern Conference Finals against the Raptors if you want. Toronto just seems to have Milwaukee's number. I'm curious if you think there is an explanation for that, what it is they do and what they're capable of doing that can knock the Bucks off on a regular basis. Because even when they're losing these games, it's not like I feel as though the Bucks would lose a seven-game series against, for example, the Atlanta Hawks or, you know, even the Charlotte Hornets, a team that just beat them back-to-back. Like, I have faith that the Bucks can match up, at the very least, match up well in a seven-game series. With the Raptors, I don't know. I don't know what the evidence is telling me. The evidence is telling me that the Raptors could win a seven-game series against the Bucks. So what is it that they do? And more importantly, are there other teams that are going to deploy whatever magic that the Raptors have to stop the Bucks short when we get to the postseason?
Well, the only team that kind of plays like the Raptors would be Miami. I mean, think of Pascal Siakam and Bam Adebayo. Think of, you know, Fred VanVleet and Kyle Lowry and, you know, when Gary Trent Jr. is healthy and you've got Jimmy. Now we see Jimmy Butler's another level, but you know what I mean? Like similarly styled, what, Precious Achiuwa and PJ Tucker, like these 6'8", you know, kind of physical guys. So no, it can't really be replicated outside of Miami, because I don't think other teams have those kind of guys. But also, JR, I mean, Nick Nurse and Eric Spoelstra are phenomenal coaches. We know this. And it's not a mistake that those two teams have given the Bucks all kinds of fits in the Mike Budenholzer era. So, you know, could other teams try some stuff? Sure. Like Charlotte, you know, they're small as well, but they're just not as, I don't think there's discipline defensively. And not as, I guess, good. I mean, Charlotte likes to run and get up and down, but I guess we haven't seen them really, you know. Yeah, they beat the Bucks twice, and Giannis had the, you know, a game winner off the crazy game winner to beat them once. But I don't know. Charlotte might win a couple of games and muck it up. But, I get what you're saying. I don't think Toronto could beat the Bucks as currently constructed, you know, in a series. They could definitely make it difficult. You know, 5-6 games where they're all really close. Miami, I think, could beat the Bucks, and I say that because of Tyler Hero becoming the guy or re-becoming the guy from the bubble, right? Whatever happened to him last year, that seems to be last year. You know, I think if the Heat are totally healthy, the way they play, that could be a problem. So yeah, but you're right though. What the Raptors do, JR, is they just, you know, obviously they didn't invent the wall, but as we know, 4 years ago, three, you know, they did that against Giannis. But really, to me, JR, it's what they do to Chris Middleton. You know, Middleton just has his lunch handed to him every time they play the Raptors. They trap him, they stress him, they make him work really hard on both ends of the court. They make him turn it over. And look, Giannis is Giannis, right? And if he scores 40, but Chris Middleton's 4-for-16, I mean, you know, that the Bucks probably aren't going to win. So they just have Middleton's number. Now let's not forget, you know, in a couple of these wins, Giannis missed the first two Toronto games. Drew Holiday got hurt and played his worst game of you know, a month and a half on that game on January 5th that we talked about. He missed this one. So even in that sense, you're still like, man, if they're all together, how different is it, right? And so that I mean, I think that's a fair fair assessment as well. So, yeah, look, I'm not discounting Toronto, JR, because they definitely give them problems, and that would not be a fun series. But I think they beat, you know, the Bucks would win that. It would just be Miami. All these other teams currently in the East, they're just not constructed that way. And frankly, I don't think they're coached that way. So we'll, you know, I think you don't want to see them just because you're like, oh, man, that could be a six-game slog of a first round. You know what I mean?
One thing, so you mentioned Tyler Hero, and one thing that he does, he provides for Miami is an exceptional option off the bench. The vast majority of his work this year has been off of the bench. And I haven't run the numbers, but I would venture to guess that across the NBA, the benches aren't awesome. Obviously, that comes with a lot of roster churn, and when you've got guys coming in on hardship contracts, and you know, tons and tons of players playing in the league this year who would not normally have been on an NBA roster, even for a brief amount of time. I would imagine that everybody's got some bench issues. I don't know what it means to not have a bench that's clicking, but certainly the Bucks, you know, they could do better. They could do better on their on the guys that are coming off the bench in terms of what they're bringing, you know, especially offensively. What do you see from the Bucks bench? Do you label it a concern that they're maybe not at the level they've been at the last few years? Do you look at one or two guys that you say, this person has to really pick it up because they're really going to rely on him? And I would say, especially in the post-Boogie era, where Boogie was kind of providing some of the things that the Bucks are lacking, it's you know, the decision to cut him has more to do with the end of the year than it does right now. But what do you think has to happen for this bench team to kind of be bench unit to kind of be a threat again?
Yeah, so I think you know, I think Pat Connaughton is, you know, he's been a guy who went from, you know, playing almost 30 minutes a game, starting 15 times, to now that the unit's healthy, those minutes are coming down. You know, his 3-point shooting, those numbers are kind of coming down as well. And you know, Mike Budenholzer acknowledged after the game in Atlanta that, you know, it all of that heavy work early. Remember, Pat is coming off, he's just a week out of health and safety protocol as well. You know, so Connaughton's a key that he continues to shoot. I think they're still trying to figure out Jordan Wara here, JR. Like, Wara, you know, got some run, looked good, and then he was totally benched. And then he, you know, started again because of health and safety protocols, and now it looks like he's getting some opportunities with the four other starters. So I don't, you know, so Wara, I don't know. I don't think they know what he's going to do. So let's just stick with the vets. And that's Pat Connaughton's your sixth man right now. You've got Wesley Matthews, and, you know, George Hill. Dante DiVincenzo, you know, people are kind of losing their minds. He has just played 7 games. You know, it's going to be a little bit for him. That's a lot of wings. That's a lot of guards. You know, it's, you need those guys to make shots. I mean, look, they started George Hill against Atlanta for Trae Young. He plays 31 minutes. He takes 4 shots. You know, that's not good enough. You know, Wesley Matthews, I think, gives you everything you need with the intangibles. And on defense, I think he's more of an offensive threat than PJ Tucker was. You know, I think he needs to continue to put the ball up, make some shots. You know, Rodney Hood, you know, 15, Semi Ojeleye's only played 17 games. He's sort of buried at this point. You know, he's not getting, I thought he might play more, JR, once Boogie was let go, and we haven't seen that. So Semi Ojeleye, I think, has drifted into the Torrey Craig category, where it almost doesn't even matter. So yeah, they need something, man. Because look, they're definitely boosted by the fact that Grayson Allen's healthy again. I think the way he's played these last couple of games, the way he scored, has shown that. But yeah, they're gonna need some scoring, and I don't know where that is right now. Maybe they think Brook Lopez will be back, and then Bobby Portis slides back into that six-man role, and that might ease a lot of things, JR, but that's still sort of a when and if that happens. So we don't know. Yeah, so right now I think it's definitely a struggle with that second unit, and Mike Budenholzer figuring out the combinations there, because when the big three aren't all together and you can't stagger two of them at once or one of them at one, like, that's really kind of messed things up, I think, just as much as it has the starters.
Trade deadline's getting closer, and we've talked about it, but they've got to make a move, don't they, Jim, to address exactly what you're talking about. They need that extra something, unless Brook Lopez is going to show up here in the next few weeks. Are you expecting a deal for sure?
I am expecting something. And okay, that's a weak hedge, I get it. But I think when you're the Bucks and you're in the salary cap and the tax issue, I mean, the buyout market is just as viable for the Bucks as using, you know, the $1.6 million trade exception for Torrey Craig. Look, at this point, you know, I know there was pie in the sky, these big name players. No, they don't need a big name player. They just need a dude who can give them some real minutes. That's not Luke Kornet, or even, frankly, DeMarcus Cousins. You know, they could use a guy who might be able to play 17 minutes, but be a little more consistent defensively. You know, and who is that guy? I don't know. Because there's 29 other teams. So, I do think something will happen. I don't think John Horst is content to sit on this. It's just that there are so many possibilities, JR. It's really hard to narrow it down, pin it down to say, this is the thing, because there's so many kind of movable parts at the end of the bench that we've been talking about. Shemi Osley, Rodney Hood. I don't think DiVincenzo's being moved. I don't think Jordan Ward is being moved. If you're talking about a couple million dollars, you know, that's a small pool of players that can actually help you. So I think it could be it'll be something. It could be anyone, though.
All right, before we get to our weekly features, any last thoughts you have?
I think the main thing is, you know, it is the big three, 16-3 if you're a Bucks fan. And I know people are getting frustrated with Chris Middleton. You know, he had 8 turnovers, 6 in the fourth quarter. Look, he's not a point guard, and yet he has played more of the point since Jrue Holiday's been out. I just want to throw these numbers at you. I think I'm going to write about this here coming up here, JR. So beginning with that Toronto game where Jrue was clearly off and then got hurt and then went into then tested positive for COVID. So in 7 games as we record this, Chris Middleton, JR, tell me if this is good or not, right? 48% shooting, 51% from 3, 93% free throw, 24.6 points, 6.4 rebounds and assists, 1.7 steals. I mean, that's like Chris Middleton back at all-star numbers.
Yeah, that's the 40, 50, 90 thing that everybody wants to see.
So, yeah, look, and some of that's because Jrue's out, right? His usage is way up. He's trying to play make more, and he admits the turnover. He's like, look, I got to own it. JR, you know this. Ball handling, passes, that's not Chris's, like, deal, like, because he's not a point guard in that way. Yes, he needs to be better, but over the scope of 7 games, JR, like, I'm a little more understanding of that. Those are real numbers from a guy who, you know, obviously had his ups and downs this year with his own injuries and bout with COVID. So that's my final thought is, you know, the big three haven't played together for a while, and Chris Middleton has hit a gear here since really the new year or after that Detroit, you know, debacle, that I think has got to be really promising if you're a Bucks fan.
All right, Jim, let's move on to our weekly features for the week, and we're going to start with one quick buck.
Desmond Mason with authority. Man. Monte Ellis puts it up at the buzzer and got it.
No way.
Monte Ellis wins the game and then heads to the locker room.
No. You got to be kidding me. Charlie Villanueva. He has got the mojo going.
To the bell, man. In your face, Brad Lojas.
The Milwaukee Bucks select Larry Sanders from Virginia Commonwealth University. Larry is not here.
One quick buck.
Okay, so this one is a name that everybody knows for sure. And I was really shocked when I found out that he'd only played in 11 games as a member of the Milwaukee Bucks. I would have thought it was much, much more, but it extends to an article that our colleague Ben Steele wrote on the Bucks page about Trayvon Palmer, former Brown Deer High School star, who got a cup of coffee with the Detroit Pistons, one of the, as we mentioned before, one of the many players with local ties to get signed to a hardship deal around the NBA. That led me to think about another alumnus of Brown Deer High School, none other than, any guess?
No, I do not. That is a black hole in my knowledge base. Oh,
so sad. Well, most people I'm sure know. That's Steve Novak. Steve Novak, former Bucks announcer. He was part of the announcer team. He played with the Bucks very briefly. He, of course, was a star at Marquette University, which is why he has a very high profile around the city of Milwaukee, and played for his father, Mike Novak, at Brown Deer High School. The Fieldhouse now bears the Novak family name. Trey Palmer coming much, much later in the Brown Deer very successful high school basketball program. Kelly Appleby, head coach, a couple state titles after Mike Novak stepped down from his post. But Steve Novak, again, I thought he played with the Bucks for a long time because he was here for parts of two seasons, but he did have that knee injury. Had a knee injury. This is not that long ago, of course. He had a knee injury that took cost him only led him to play only three games that year. He came back and shoot. I don't even have my years written down. I think this is 15, 16 is his first, and then 16 and 17 is where he resigns. He's 33 years old at that point. He'd actually been with the Knicks, teammates with Jason Kidd briefly, and then Jason Kidd, as head coach of the Bucks, wanted him back in Milwaukee. So he played here, but he was waived, I think, in February of that season. The Bucks at the time were trading Miles Plumlee for Roy Hibbert and Spencer Hawes, and they needed to cut a roster spot. And Steve Novak was unfortunately it. He was a guy who was at the end of the bench. Was known primarily for throughout his NBA career as a great 3-point shooter. Again, that's not news to most people who followed him, who remember him when he won when he almost single handedly beat UConn in the very first Big East game for Marquette, when the Big East reformed as it did for that 2005-06 season. And he was awesome. 41 points, 16 rebounds. He had a game-winning basket against Notre Dame, which is Marquette's big rival. So he was coming off the bench. He was kind of the hotshot freshman coming off the bench for the 2003 team with Dwayne Wade that went to the Final Four. So cultivated a very nice following. He winds up being the 32nd overall pick in the NBA draft by the Houston Rockets in 2006. Just a few picks ahead of PJ Tucker, by the way. And He shoots very well from three throughout his career. In the 2011-12 season with the Knicks, he shot 47.2%, 133 of 282. That is a single season NBA record. He's a career 43% 3-point shooter, and oddly enough, this surprised me. Never averaged more than 10 points per game in any of his seasons. I knew he was mostly coming off the bench, but never quite did get there. I think he shot 50% in college from three at MU. So he's very impressive. He's also a sensational free throw shooter, as you might imagine. He made 68 consecutive free throws at one point, but he did bounce around a lot, played with nine teams in his NBA career. He is responsible for introducing a WWE belt into some three-point shoot-arounds at practice when he was with the Bucks, which might be a precursor for those WWE warm-ups that they wound up that the Bucks top players wound up doing in advance of games over the last few years. And then once his career was over, joined that Fox Sports Wisconsin broadcast team in 2017. He kind of went to broadcasting school for a little bit, and then he came back, was doing some Fox Sports stuff, and is certainly a beloved name around Milwaukee. So he's not really the spirit of the one quick buck feature, somebody that kind of falls below the radar, but might pop up in the deep recesses of somebody's memory. He's a name everybody around here knows. But as it relates to his Bucks career, he was really only here for a short time. So that is this week's edition of One Quick Buck. Any thoughts or memories of Steve Novak, Jim?
Not particularly. Again, that was, let's see. I covered the Bucks from 12. He came maybe just after I left in 15. And so, yeah, just kind of he fits in that sort of, like, I know he played a long time that he's from here. And that's about it. Yeah. I guess I associate him now more with as just, you know, being a local broadcaster.
For sure, yeah. It was a big deal when he came back because he kept a pretty high profile here, even though he was playing with the Clippers, the Spurs, the Knicks, Toronto briefly, Utah. I mean, he was kind of you'd be kind of hard pressed, I think, to name all nine teams that Steve Novak played with. But you know, played in the NBA from age 23 to 33. You can't go wrong, even if you didn't end up scoring 10 points a game. That's a heck of a career, and yep. he's still pretty visible. All right, we move on now to the final feature, as we do every week. It is what's making Jim mad.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
I am very disappointed.
I'm upset.
Louder! I'm upset. Say it louder! I'm upset.
That's my secret, Captain. I'm always angry.
What's making Jim mad?
Yeah, you know, I am a contact wearer on a regular basis. You know, I do, which means I own glasses as well. And JR, I, you know, for the life of me, the thing that just drives me up the wall, and I deal with this, especially when I travel, it's okay. You get like the, you know, like the glasses, wipe or the cloth or whatever it is to, you know, clean your glass lens. And I don't understand. I just don't understand how I could thoroughly be cleaning smudges of my glasses and yet somehow then have more smudges on my glasses. Like, I feel like in 2022, there should be something that they give you when you order glasses, JR, that actually clears them off, right? Like, I don't understand this. It's just one of these things where whenever I don't understand how they get dirty while they're on my face to begin with. Take them off. I don't smudge them up. I don't touch them, you know? Okay. Wipe them off the thing. The provided materials don't seem to work. That is one of those like regular annoyances that like make me irrationally mad.
This is one of those things that makes me so angry, and I just realized how angry as you're talking about it, because I always think and I only wear glasses when I'm at the computer, and I need sunglasses very badly when I'm driving around in the car, but they get smudged up so badly, and I always, you know, I blame myself because, well, obviously I've smudged them up or you know, like just let him go for a long time. And I'm just now realizing I'm not touching those lenses. I'm not smudging them up. What is causing all that? And why can't it just be wiped away with my shirt? You know, especially in the car, I'm not bringing my sunglasses into the house to have them cleaned. They're not designer sunglasses. They were off a rack. Like, they're like $9. I'm leaving them in my car and they're always dirty. And you're right. There needs to be some invention, some system that can clean these buggers cleanly and simply and easily. I know there's lots of things out there that supposedly can do it, but I am constantly looking through a haze of smudginess on my face. And it makes no sense, Jim. I'm completely with you on this. And I am now more furious about this. It's gone from mild inconvenience to the back of my head into something that I'm actually actively upset about. Very well done.
Yeah, so if anybody's listening out there and you have a solution to this, definitely tweet us or email us. Or, you know, if you want to be nice, you can send us some. But, you know, help us. Because it just ruins moments throughout the day for me.
I need self-cleaning glasses, but also I need them to be cheap because I still want to buy them for $9 off of a gas station rack. My car just got stolen. I don't remember if I mentioned that on the last one, but about 10 days ago, my car got taken. My sunglasses were in the car, so they are gone. So I just bought a brand new pair for like $12, and I realized after buying them, because I spent very little time vetting them, I think I put them on my face once. I'm pretty sure they're meant for a younger kid. They don't quite fit. They're a little tight on my giant noggin. And so I feel a little goofy driving around, but I don't put a lot of thought or effort into these things. I just, you know, I just want them to be clean so I can see. It's frustrating, Jim. All right, that's going to do it for our episode of the Point Forward Podcast this week. We've got, as mentioned before, there's that Memphis game, but the big one Friday against the first place Chicago Bulls, the local rival Chicago Bulls. First look that the Bucks have this year at a team that's been surprising a lot of people. What, Jim, do you think DeMar DeRozan is now like fully fledged in this MVP conversation? Because with Kevin Durant going out with an injury for 4 to 6 weeks, it's so wide open. It's like impossible outside of I guess you say Steph Curry still, but it's really hard to pin down who the guy is. So what do you think? You think DeMar is going to pick up some steam here in his candidacy?
Yeah, especially if you know, Durant is going to be out for 4 to 6 weeks. That definitely takes him out of the conversation. That's just too much time. I mean, all of these players are going to miss a lot of time off. I think Devin Booker is going to kind of slide in at this point. JR, I know John Morant missed a lot of this winning streak with some injuries, but Memphis is currently the 3 seed, you know, in the West. So I think, yeah, if guys, you know, if Golden State continues to fall, but then resets because Clay, yeah, I think this is going to be a really interesting MVP race. Giannis Antetokounmpo, of course, is right in the middle of it. But it's one of those things where, you know, the Bucks have, as we record this, have 10 more losses than the Phoenix Suns. You know, so that's what I'm going to be curious about is individually, let's say the Bucks are the 3 seed again, right? But the Suns win 60 games. That'll be interesting. If the Bulls win the East and win some of these head-to-head matchups and DeMar DeRozan is 20, yeah, it'll be really interesting to see where record plays into this, sort of raw stats games played. Great point. I think this week should be a lot of fun with Memphis and Chicago coming into town. Really good litmus test for this Bucks team with or without Jrue Holiday. And especially seeing some guys who we haven't seen yet this year and what they're going to look like and guys who are going to be in that conversation, I think, post All-Star break.
Man, I did not realize Memphis was as good as they are, 31-15. Like you said, the 3 seed in the West. I confess I don't pay a close attention to the Western Conference standings. And hello, this is really something. How about an all-LA play-in possibility? Clippers, Lakers, maybe Kawhi will be back for that.
that would be something.
I mean, we got Golden State Lakers last year. That was pretty remarkable. That would certainly be fun to see something like that again. The Timberwolves trying to mix things up down there too and get a playoff spot. Love to see it. Love to see the small markets rising up a little bit. All right, Jim, thanks for joining us this week again. He is Jim Ozarski. Find everything he has at jsonline.com. He's got you've heard already on this podcast some of the things he wants to write about going forward. Obviously, he will be there for these 3 straight games at Pfizer Forum. No football playoffs for you this time around, Jim. And your Bengals and your old stomping grounds still alive. This is quite the time to be Jim Ozarski.
Yeah, it is. It was fun. I'm glad that the game was basically over before the Bucks played last Saturday. So yeah, Bengals fans, Bucks fans, Chicago White Sox fans, there's a lot of threads that connect those 3 fan bases in the 3 cities that I have called home and worked. So yeah, you know, whatever. I don't root for teams, but I do know like residents of the city of Cincinnati. So yeah, I'm happy for fans, just like I was happy for Bucks fans. It's a long, long time coming for organizations like these two. So, you know, let's see if they'll keep it going.
Find him on Twitter at Jim Ozarski. You can find me at JR Radcliffe. Again, that's my name. I'm the host, and we'll see you again next week. Find us on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Point Forward Podcast, a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and JSOnline.com production.